You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
I am excited, and I know I open every single episode that I host with with that phrase, but it's always true.
That's also true.
Because I love Star Trek. I love Star Trek Voyager. I love the podcast, and I love you, Char.
Oh, I love you too, buddy.
And I love Essential Trek.
Yes, this has quickly become a favorite of ours in our series, and we're midway through it now. We are going to tackle season 4 of Essential Trek, and every time that we do this, I get more and more excited. I can't wait to hash it out with you, and so, I don't know, I think these are listener favorites as well. They like to discuss our decisions. They like to debate them on the Babel conference or on Twitter with us. And it's just kind of fun. And I'm hoping that eventually all the series-based podcasts on Trek FM will go through their respective series. And we will be able to compile the ultimate list of what is absolute essential Trek through all the Treks.
I haven't even thought of that before. That's a really good idea. I like that. Like, you know, it's someplace on the website where it's just like, boom, you want an expedited Star Trek marathon for all the shows, here you go.
Yeah, exactly. I know that Wired Magazine did something on something close to this, where it was like the absolute best episodes of insert series here. They did something like that, and they were interesting, controversial, debatable choices, and I feel like we're doing the same thing, and it's a lot of fun.
Now, to clarify, for those of you who do not remember Essential Trek or you're listening to us for the first time, Essential Trek is where we go through every single episode of a given season and discuss whether or not it is essential to the overall arching plot of the show or a specific major character. Now, it's not necessarily the best episodes, but it is the ones that we deem essential, hence Essential Trek. So even if it's not that great of an episode, it might have a really, really strong character moment that is essential or will come up later on in another season or that has shown
right
up before this episode.
Yeah, important plot points that come roaring back have incredible significance. We've already seen a little bit of that. I mean, I remember with season 2 when we were going through that, all that Kazon Arc stuff, some of those were really not the greatest episodes, but we had to keep them because they were important. And now we're in season 4, though, and we have some incredible game changers. So why don't we dive in and find out what is essential to this season? I'm dying to know what you think.
All right, season 4, episode 1 is Scorpion Part 2. Captain Janeway forges a shaky alliance with the Borg Collective to defeat Species 8472, leading to a new potential crew member coming aboard. Now, I wonder who that crew member is.
Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron, that's right, the Theron.
There you go.
I don't know, wait, no, what was it? It was Charlize of Theron, I think. Is that what
it was? Yes, it was, yes.
Yes, okay, so we talked about this last Essential Trek, and I mean, this is a two-parter that straddles two seasons. You kind of need the second half.
You do. You know, I don't think we made a rule, we didn't really make a rule saying you had to keep both episodes of a two-parter, but seeing as how important this one is, I think it's kind of a no-brainer because, especially for the new crew member that does come on board. I mean, you kind of need to know that going forward. You need to know how that happens.
Yeah. I agree.
Not to mention, this does wrap up Scorpion Part 1, which was an amazing cliffhanger.
Yeah, amazing cliffhanger. Very important Janeway / Chakotay moments. Not necessarily / but you know what I mean.
That's Kirk and Spock.
It's very much the genesis of Seven of Nine.
Genesis?
Genesis?
Genesis alone is not. Sorry.
you know, it wrapped up that, you know, it, like you said, it wrapped up the cliffhanger. It wraps up. It doesn't, I shouldn't say wrap up, but it kind of puts a button on the Species 8472 story where it's over for the time being, but yet it's going to come up hardcore later on.
Totally. Yeah. It wraps things up kind of like the immediate issue at hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of stuff you've got to know. This is definitely essential. Why don't we move on?
Yeah. Boom. Essential. Episode 2, The Gift. Kes's telepathic and latent psychokinetic powers begin to grow rapidly while Voyager's newest crew member, the former Borg drone 7 of 9, deals with her new individuality. Now, I'm sure this is the only time that we're going to see 7 deal with her individuality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is Star Trek. They only address this once and then they move on, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. Once they establish, move on. Establish, move on.
Well, no. this is just the first in a long series of 7 of 9 exploring her individuality episodes, but with the departure of another blonde crew member, it becomes very essential viewing, do you not think?
Oh, yeah, hardcore, absolutely. I mean, like, there's a lot of things that happen in this episode, and Kes leaving is the biggest and most important one. And I think right
by
below
far.
That is 7 of 9 finally shedding her Borg technology, most of it, at least most of her outer appearance of Borg, and then truly accepting to come along on the journey.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. Kes is absolutely the number one, and we've been following her for the last 3 seasons now, and at this point, it's really sad to see her go. You know, the reasons behind the scenes, whatever you believe or not, mm-hmm. it's still a major character departure, and this is not something that happens very often in Trek, and this was not in the day where main characters were all expendable and replaceable. This was a mm-hmm. big freaking deal, and so you have to know that. You have to watch it, and you have to deal with it.
It's interesting because, if you think about it, the characters who have left shows, I think we've had 3 major characters leave in the history of Trek.
Let's see.
Because the first one is Denise Crosby.
As, right.
Natasha Yar. Some would argue like Rand in TOS. I say no to that one.
Afraid not.
Yeah. You have Tasha Yar in TNG. You have Dax in Deep Space 9. And then you have Kes in Voyager. Now, it's really funny because these kind of characters are pretty similar in maybe in the way that I feel about them. maybe that's where it begins and ends. But I see, even though Tasha is, you know, like the rough and tumble one who can kick ass, and so is Dax, I always felt like they had a very warm quality to them, a very sexy quality. And with Kes, she can't really kick ass, but she has that warm, calming mentality where people come to her. And it's just, you know, like it's funny because they're all female. And they all kick ass in their own way.
Yeah, thank you. Kes does not physically kick ass very much, but she does kick ass in her own way, especially when she's the advocate for the Doctor.
Absolutely. And on top, like, and if you want to get, like, you know, badassery, not just in social norms or in fighting for your fellow man, but she has telekinetic powers. And, that's pretty cool. So, I don't know, maybe I'm way off base, but I just think it's a common thread of the people who leave and people who come in. And it's interesting.
That is an interesting thing. I never completely made that connection that all 3 had those similar traits, but mm-hmm. maybe there is something to that. Maybe there's a reason. I don't know. Maybe there's a reason why they get written off.
Maybe.
Like, I don't know. Is that sort of a trope? Is that the kind of character that is most likely to be killed off or something? I don't know. I would love to hear listener feedback on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should just count ourselves lucky that Ensign Sato did not get killed off.
Right, because she's the same way.
I feel like she would be the person who, like, following this trend, I feel like Sato would be the one who would get killed off.
Absolutely, yeah, and especially being female, you know. I almost said Travis Mayweather, too, but no, it's the females that have mm-hmm. this trend right now, so it would definitely be Hoshi Sato. Well, if you do want to chime in on this, you can contact me at OhTheProfanity on Twitter.
Or you can find me at The Insane Robin, and of course, there's always the Babel Conference.
That's right, and that's on Facebook. Okay, so we're keeping the gift for sure.
Yes.
Okay, that leads to Day of Honor.
Day of Honor, Episode 3. Lieutenants B'Elanna Torres and Tom Paris admit feelings for each other while close to death. A race of homeless aliens ask for Voyager's help, but are not quite satisfied with what they receive. Now, this is very, very, very essential to the B'Elanna Torres / Tom Paris arc.
Right. We've had a lot of flirtation leading up to this. We had a little bit of getting it on in caves and blood fever. And this is really, though, the no turning back moment. They confess their feelings in spacesuits with the warp core flying yonder by. And because their relationship is so essential and important to the whole rest of the series, not just season 4, not just this little quadrant of it either, pardon the stupid pun, but you've got to know about this. And I would say for that reason alone, you really need to watch this episode. The A plot, or like these aliens, I don't know if you'd call that the A plot or the B plot. I guess they're intertwined. Mm-hmm. It's just okay. But I mean, the story overall, it's not like it's a weak story, but it's not spectacular. You want to watch it for the Paris and Torres story.
Yeah. Like overall, this episode is not something that you would write home about. It's not something where, you know, you go, oh my God, you have to watch this episode. But it's B'Elanna and Tom are such a cornerstone of the Voyager experience. You know, we see so many firsts with them. We see when they get married. We see their first, I don't think we see their first date, but we see them on dates. We see them get married.
Yeah.
We see the birth of their first child. You know, like we see all of this happen. And so this is very much the, if you could pinpoint, and I'm going to say the word again, if you could pinpoint the genesis of that relationship, it would be here.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. This is where it definitely turns that corner, and it is indeed an official relationship.
Yeah. All right. So that leads us to episode 4, Nemesis. Chakotay is trapped on a planet where two species are fighting a genocidal war against each other. Now, we did an episode rewrite of this not too long ago.
That is correct. And even though we did appreciate it more after viewing the episode in preparation for the rewrite, I would still say let's drop this one because there's no repercussions. Chakotay does not grow as a person, and therefore there is no real value to keeping this one in there.
Yeah, this race doesn't come up again. This situation doesn't come up again. Chakotay is not in the corner drinking, going, oh my God, if only I could release the hate, you know, 2 years from now. None of that
nope.
happens.
Nothing.
So by the very definition that we of the rules that we have laid down, this is gone.
There we go. Okay, next.
Revulsion, episode 5. The Doctor meets another sentient hologram and tries to help the troubled program with his problems. And boy, does he have problems in spades.
Indeed. This is a troubled dude. Revulsion. This is a trickier one. I would say this is the first big stumbling block. You have the beginnings of the Astrometrics Lab, which becomes an important part of the ship. And Kim also gets his chance with Seven and then promptly cowers, of course. But the rest of it, nah, not essential. What do you think?
I think even the things that you mention, we can let go or pick up later. Like the Astrometrics Lab, I mean, it's a cool spot. It's a cool place on the ship, and I'm really glad that they did introduce it because, you know, they said, like, oh, thanks to Seven of Nine and Harry Kim, we now have this great new, you know, place in the ship. And mm-hmm. I think they were trying to avoid what happened in Star Trek Generations where, you know, Data and Picard are in the Astrometrics Lab and they go, let's go to the Astrometrics Lab. And us as an audience goes, why have we never seen this before on the ship?
Right. And then all of a sudden there's this beautiful new set. And that's great that they slowly warmed us up to it. But I agree, we could just jump in there. And then all of a sudden, oh, hey, they built this thing. We needed it. And it looks beautiful. And hey, ooh, ah, that's fantastic. The episode itself, nah.
No.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, moving on. Episode 6, The Raven. Seven of Nine experiences hallucinations and believes that she's being called back to the Borg Collective. Now, this one, I think we can have a little bit of back and forth on, because here's the thing, is that Seven of Nine talks about her freaking individuality so much in the show that we cannot pick every single Seven of Nine episode that deals with individuality, because that would be almost every single Seven of Nine episode.
Truth.
But her beginnings is very important, and her backstory is very important. I think all of that is covered better in Dark Frontier. You know, we kind of get a quick summary of this episode in Dark Frontier, when it's like, hey, you remember, you know, my parents and how they did this and this and this. I think we can skip this one and wait for Dark Frontier.
Wow, you make a really good point. I did not consider that when debating this episode myself. I thought this has major character development and backstory for Seven, and I was going to argue that it's really essential. But you're right, Dark Frontier does cover her backstory much better and in greater detail than The Raven does. And so, yeah, I'm going to have to defer to you on this one. You're right. Let's drop it.
All right. It's gone.
Bye-bye.
Now, don't get me wrong. I think this is a great episode. I think it's well written. I think it's well acted.
I agree.
We deal with this so much, we have to be sparing.
It's true. I mean, there's a lot of the Seven of Nine becoming an individual stories that we're probably going to have to trim off because it's just so much.
It's so much. It's too much. All right. So, episode 7, Scientific Method. A group of aliens perform experiments on the crew without their knowledge. Okay. I love this episode. I think this is a great episode.
Yeah, I do too.
The crap that happens to the crew is hilarious / horrifying.
Yes, yes.
But is it key? Is it essential? Because now you have the ending. You have Tom and B'Elanna who, you know, like in the previous episodes in Day of Honor, they express their feelings for each other. But in this one, they pursue their feelings for each other.
Right. That is the moment that I really wanted to argue for, because there are a lot of cool things going on in this episode. I mean, Paris and Torres are getting it on. Janeway is giving Grumpy Cat a run for her money. Tuvok asks if he can flog things. I mean, what's not to love about that? It's a great story, and I love it too, and I really do want to keep it. The definitive thing is, though, that yes, we established Paris and Torres are a couple. And they even question at the end of this episode, where was this all as a result of these experiences? And they come to the conclusion, we don't really care. And then they kiss. And so it kind of establishes that this is going to be an ongoing relationship, when if they wanted to duck out, this was the time.
Now, usually we have one optional per season.
Do you think this is it?
Maybe. I'm gonna say yes, but I'm gonna defer to you. So, do we make it essential or do we make it optional?
Boy, it's tough. I kind of want to just keep it, but I don't have very good justification for that. Let's wait until the end to see if we have any others that we're going to put up as an optional and see if and how they compare. Because I don't think Scientific Method is absolutely essential.
Okay, so right now we're putting a temporary optional on it.
Yes.
Okay, all right. You heard it, folks. Temporary optional as of right now.
We'll come back to it.
Okay, episode 8. This is a no-freaking-brainer. Year of Hell. Obsessed with restoring the Krenim Imperium, no matter the cost, a Krenim military temporal scientist creates changes in history that all but destroy Voyager.
Yeah, do we really need to go into this one?
All we need to talk about is that this is the second part of what certain fans call the Year of Hell trilogy. The first one being Time and Again.
Right, which we talked about in Essential Voyager Part 3.
Now, here's the thing. This needs to be argued. Now, obviously, this is going to be Essential Trek, but I think it can be argued because here's the thing. Our definition of Essential Trek is stuff that comes up later on or has been mentioned before. This is, we have described this arc with the phrase epic reset button.
Yes.
So this has such a hardcore reset button that you could argue, well, it's not essential to the overall storyline, so we can move on. It's not Essential Trek, no matter how amazing it is. But thankfully, Time and Again, I think it's called Time and Again, right?
Well, that was a season one episode.
It's not Time and Again. It's the one where Kes was shifting back and forth through
before
time.
Before and after.
Before and after. Same freaking difference.
Well, it kind of was. I mean, it's both time related. That's why it gives Janeway a headache.
Yeah, before and after has saved us from that conversation. And since we saw the Krynim in that episode, and it was it kind of teased the Year of Hell storyline, this is the payoff. So yes, essential.
Yeah, I have to agree. Okay, yes, they did prelude it with before and after. Although, you could argue that because Kes actually mentions it, does that change the timeline? I mean, the whole butterfly effect thing. You could argue that it doesn't even matter. Like, she gives them the warning and then they end up not encountering them whatsoever. But yes, this is the epic reset button, but I would say that it is so good that you must watch it anyway.
Yes.
You have to know what happens here. You have to see Voyager go through hell and back, the crew suffering. This is so often regarded as one of the very best episodes of Voyager, if not the best, that if you don't watch it, either something is wrong with you or you're really just missing out on some really good Star Trek. And so you really do just need to watch it. I think this is an absolute, of course you watch it. Do it now.
And so that ultimately leads us to Episode 9, Year of Hell Part 2. With Voyager almost destroyed, Captain Janeway risks everything to rescue Paris and Chakotay and stop Anorax from continuing to tamper with the timeline. So this is the culmination. Obviously, we need it.
Oh, totally. Because without it, you would never get Time's Up.
I freaking love it when you do that. Okay, so
I know you do. That's why I did it.
We have to move on. I think we're doing a good pace because we're in like the 20-minute mark and we're halfway through the season-ish, so this is good.
We're all right.
Episode 10, B'Elanna is imprisoned for having violent thoughts on a planet of peaceful telepaths. I like this episode, but I don't think it's essential.
Right. The episode Random Thoughts, not essential. I mean, it's a fairly average episode. It's really no net gain or loss in terms of Voyager continuity or significance. It just is. It's enjoyable, but it's not essential.
Right.
So let's wipe it out.
Episode 11, Concerning Flight. When pirates steal the ship's main computer and other critical equipment, Captain Janeway tries to track down the missing equipment with the help of the holographic Leonardo da Vinci. One of the more odder episodes of Voyager.
Yes. They fly in a little hang glider thing and have a great time.
Now, is this the last time we see Da Vinci?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I believe so. Now, it's not the last time you see the Da Vinci program, I believe, but I think it's the last time we see Leonardo da Vinci, the character.
Now, that was going to be my response for why it's essential because we see Leonardo da Vinci again, but if this is the last time, do we need it? Do we need a close on that character?
We really don't. I mean, would you say that the whole Sherlock Holmes and Professor Moriarty thing is essential to TNG? And this isn't even that essential. It's not even that significant.
To answer your question, yes, I would say that Moriarty is essential to TNG.
Well, just because Elementary Dear Data is such a good episode, maybe.
So we're dropping Concerning Flight.
I think so. I mean, it's a pretty average episode in and of itself. It's also non-consequential. Da Vinci is not enough weight. He's not even a semi-regular character, and I don't know how much, by and large, an audience cares about him. He's just kind of there.
Okay. All right. Here we go. It's gone.
Okay. Next one.
Mortal Coil, Episode 12. After being killed on an away mission and then revived by Seven's Borg nanoprobes, Neelix finds himself in a deep existential and spiritual crisis, questioning his faith and the meaning of his existence.
Okay. I think you got to keep this one.
Hardcore, yes.
Yeah, excellent Neelix story, essential Neelix background. You learn a lot about what the Talaxians believe happens in the afterlife, how that affects Neelix, brings up great questions in the story, makes you think about your own beliefs and what would happen if they were challenged. And I think that's something that we should all do. It's a very good episode. You gotta keep it. It's so good.
No matter how you feel about the Neelix character, I feel like you can, I don't want to, relate is not the right word, but you can empathize with him in this moment, in this episode, and what he's going through, because you know that if you went through the same thing, you would have the same questions.
Right? Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, I don't care how hardcore atheist you are. I'm not saying this because of religion or because of God or because of even spirituality. It's just our existence demands to be questioned and thought about. You know, what do they say? An unexamined life is not worth living.
Yeah.
So this is that moment where Neelix examines his life and his place in the universe, like we all should and do. So yeah, we absolutely have to keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it really matters what your spiritual or religious belief is. This is something that you should always be examining, questioning. And if you went through an experience like this and didn't, mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
I can't imagine how you would not.
Yeah. Episode 13, Waking Moments. The crew begins to experience vivid nightmares, all containing the same mysterious alien. I love this episode, but it is by no means essential.
No, it's really not. It's fun to watch, but it has no consequences whatsoever. And, no, dump it.
Yep, gone.
Okay, next.
Episode 14, Seven of Nine finds an abandoned subspace relay network that has the ability to send a message, or in this case, the Doctor, to a Starfleet ship detected in the Alpha Quadrant. Not only is this one of my favorite Voyager episodes, or one of the best Star Trek episodes ever, this is one of the most essential Star Trek Voyager episodes.
Absolutely. Yes. Not only is this the very first time that we have confirmed contact with the Alpha Quadrant, they know for the first time that Voyager is out there and it's alive, and then Voyager knows that the Alpha Quadrant is going to be out there and looking for them. But you have a great story on top of it. Absolutely essential to Voyager continuity. It's entertaining. What's not to love about this episode? You have to have it. Now, from this point going forward, I want to propose something.
Okay.
Because next up is Hunters, and then also Prey, and these three episodes really tie into one another, and I figure it's an all or nothing thing. You either have them all or not at all.
Let's talk about it. Let's go to episode 15, Hunters. So Voyager receives a message from Starfleet containing letters from the crew's friends and family. This is the natural step forward from Message in a Bottle. This is the
absolutely.
This is when they throw the message in a bottle back.
Right, the proverbial message in a bottle. Yeah, and again, first time they get letters from home, first time they hear from their loved ones back there. For that reason alone, it's essential to Voyager continuity. But it's also a really touching moment just to see and watch. So I can't see how this is not essential.
The whole journey is to get home, is to get back to the Alpha Quadrant, get back to Earth, and this is their first real hard contact with Earth. It's got to go in there. And regardless, we see, even though we saw one Hirogen in Message in a Bottle, we get to explore the Hirogen race in Hunters and understand what they're all about. And they pop up a couple more times.
Right. So in that respect, also essential.
Absolutely. All right. Now, Prey, episode 16. Voyager rescues a critically ill Hirogen hunter who wishes to finish his hunt against a resilient species, a recent enemy of the Voyager crew, as Captain Janeway gives Seven of Nine a lesson in compassion. Now, your argument is that because we have Message in a Bottle and Hunters, we absolutely need Prey. I'm going to counter-argument and say we don't need Prey. Why do we need Prey? I mean, we establish connection in Message in a Bottle. We get the letters in Hunters. What is essential to the overall plot of the show with Prey?
Okay. The big deal with Prey is the fact that they were using the Hirogen network to get those messages. It's a very minor detail in Message in a Bottle and Hunters. But in Prey, that's where it becomes important because you learn about these people that are behind this network and the consequences that ensue. Because the Hirogen are not to be with.
Now, don't you think we learn that in Hunters?
Yes, but I think we learn a lot more about the Hirogen and what their culture is like and what Voyager is really up against. I would say it's essential enough, especially because they come up later in the season, to understand as much as we can about these aliens. They are absolutely essential to season 4, I would say. So I think you got to keep this one for the Voyager continuity to have the fullest understanding that you can. I think it is that important. I really do.
So I'm going to agree with you and disagree with you. I'm going to agree with you for different reasons.
Okay, do it.
I don't think this is essential for the Hirogen. I think that this is essential for Species 8472.
Okay, go on.
So with Species 8472, we have a limited amount of interaction with species 8472, but it's always important. There's always something important going on behind them. I mean, later on, I'm thinking about when we see them, when they create a base that's exactly like Starfleet headquarters and they're training to invade Earth. That's a big deal. I mean, that's an Earth connection. Yeah. And so I feel like we need to learn as much as we can about this species before we go into that.
That is a very good point, because we do not learn a whole lot about species 8472, so that when we do get a snippet of detail with them or about them, it's really crucial.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that point.
And this doesn't have a happy ending, which I appreciate.
Right. Yeah, you know, that happens every now and again. And while that's not essential, Voyager, I mean, it does make it interesting and different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So do we keep Prey?
We keep Prey.
There we go.
All right. Episode 17. Seven believes that a visiting weapons merchant assaulted her. I have a hard time even remembering most of the scenes in this episode. And so I'm pretty sure this is not essential to the overall Voyager experience.
I'd have to say so. It's another Seven episode, but we are not getting any major character development. We're not getting backstory. It just happens to feature Seven of Nine. And I even said in my notes, I had to look up what this episode was about, because even though I watched it probably less than a year ago, I don't remember much of what it's about. So if it's that inconsequential, it can't be essential. So out it goes.
Yeah, so there it goes. Out, gone. Episode 18, The Killing Game. In an attempt to find new ways to satisfy their predatory instincts, the Hirogen alter the memories of the Voyager crew and force them into violent holodeck simulations, partially recreating World War II.
Yes. All right. There's a lot of things going on here. This works off of the Hirogen, established in Hunters and Prey. Does the whole Nazis and Trek trope, and it does it very well. It's a fun story overall. It might be a small stretch to say that it's essential to Voyager, but you have the Hirogen angle.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say is a strong two-parter, and that even if it is a small-ish Hirogen connection, it's worth keeping.
I have an even stronger connection for you. This is essential to the upcoming episode, Flesh and Blood, where we find out, because at the end of The Killing Game Part 2, Janeway gives holodeck technology to the Hirogen to make them leave, something
yes.
that you should never do, because this is why Starfleet says don't share technology. They do it anyway, and all of these holodeck characters become self-aware and run amok.
Yes, you're absolutely right. So therefore, for continuity, you gotta keep parts one and two.
This is hardcore Voyager continuity.
For real.
Once you factor that last bit in, yes.
And I don't see anything wrong with that, so let's keep them.
So that's episode 18 and 19, just so you guys get the full description. With half the Voyager crew trapped in a deadly simulation staged by the Hirogen, Captain Janeway must find a way to retake the ship. So we're keeping it.
Okay.
Episode 20, Vis-a-vis. A genome thief switches physical forms with Tom Paris. No.
Oh, yes. This is the one where Tom plays Pimp My Ride.
Yeah.
That's all I really remember about this episode for the most part. The one redeeming factor, I guess it has, is that it does portray a little bit of a snag in the Paris and Torres relationship. I mean, that's very realistic. Not all relationships go perfectly. And in this one, Tom spends just a little bit too much time with that Camaro. And as a result, ignoring B'Elanna. Like, I think he misses a date or he's late or something like that. And he has to apologize by the end of the episode. That's great, but I don't know if it's enough.
Yeah, it's a bump in the road, but it is by no means a yield sign or a stop sign in their relationship, so I think we can skip it.
Yeah, it's a pothole.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's drop it.
Episode 21, The Omega Directive. Captain Janeway must carry out a top-secret Starfleet directive regarding the most powerful substance known to exist. This has a lot of great Star Trek elements, a lot of sci-fi elements. I mean, the secrecy of that Starfleet can sometimes go into... you know, like the most powerful substance known to exist. I mean, this is all hard sci-fi and beauty and science and Seven of Nine's of, you know, vision of perfection and her vision of a deity. And it's just, I think this is good. And I think this is well written. This is great sci-fi. But according to the rules that we've established, I don't think it's essential. unless you factor in it's essential because it's a great episode.
Well, we've dropped episodes before that had all of that going, and that wasn't enough weight to keep them. It is a great and interesting sci-fi idea, but do we ever revisit this in Voyager again? No.
I may have a reason. It's a bit of a stretch, and you could still say no.
Yeah, make your argument.
Here's the thing, is that one thing that we really kind of stress is that whether it's essential or not, is it about the journey home? You know, like, you know, you could kind of stretch that every episode is about the journey home because they're going in that direction. But this is a threat that directly affects their journey home. If this goes wrong, they will not be able to go to warp for a very, very, very long time, which means that they'd have to settle at the first place that they could find. That so if so instead, if this is kind of like the anti eye of the needle, or like it's the anti are we going to get home faster, this is the are we going to get home at all, because this could strand us in the Delta Quadrant.
Oh boy, you are making such a good argument. Wow, I had not thought about that at all, and you're blowing my mind. And I kind of want to keep it now because of that perspective.
Yeah, I think because it directly affects them getting home, I think we should keep it.
Okay. Well, and on top of that, it is a good episode, so yes, let's keep it. Plus, it does have that grandiose, science-y, sci-fi element. Okay, that's enough. All right.
Episode 22, Unforgettable. Chakotay meets a woman who claims that they fell in love a few weeks before, although he doesn't remember her anymore. Nor do we remember this episode. No, we've talked about this episode so many times about how we don't like it.
Can we just chuck it, please?
Yeah, it's gone.
Okay, bye.
Episode 23, Living Witness. Reactivated after lying inactive for 700 years, a backup version of the Doctor tries to uncover the truth about war crimes supposedly committed by Voyager when they passed a planet centuries ago. We talk about this episode a lot, and this is kind of considered the mirror universe episode of Voyager without actually being the mirror universe.
Right.
Nothing happens in this episode that affects Voyager because it takes place 700 years in the future, but you might be able to argue because this is special to the series and special to the franchise because we never get a mirror universe episode and this is as close as we get. Should we keep it?
Actually, there is an angle that you can have on this one that makes it essential, maybe. And that is that Voyager tended to have a bad reputation with its doings in the Delta Quadrant among species native to the area. You know, think season two. A lot of people they encountered did not think Voyager was so great. And this is yet another instance of that, like kind of blown up. Mm-hmm. And so you could argue that this is more of that and it really displays that. And even better, though, it has the message of how history can become so distorted depending on who's telling it. And that's a great message. That's a very Trek thing. And it's a good story on top of that. Mm-hmm. Now, is it essential to the Voyager continuity? No. So we might have another optional here.
Well, I think this is a better episode than Scientific Method.
Mm-hmm.
When you have two optionals, I say go with the better episode.
Yeah, I have to agree. So if we make Living Witness the optional.
Yeah, I think so. All right. That leads us to episode 24, Demon. Voyager, desperately low on fuel, finds deuterium on a highly hostile demon class planet. I think this is a good episode. And I think this is well crafted. It's interesting. It has a mystery and it has intrigue. And it can be wrapped up in one sentence as to why we need it is because we see this come up again in the next season in Oblivion.
Right. Yes. I thought this is another one of those all or nothing things, because if you dump this one, you also have to remove Course Oblivion in season 5. And I vote that we keep it because it finally addresses for the first time in a long while the scarcity of resources for Voyager and how they're actually pretty desperate because they're landing on this demon class planet. So it is different, too. It's a different story. It's kind of unique and sci-fi-ish. And it's not your typical run-of-the-mill Star Trek story. So I want to keep it.
I want to keep it too. I think we absolutely have to because of Oblivion. And I like that you brought it up because it brings to the forefront, oh, we're running low on stuff. We're running out of stuff. We need more stuff. But at the same time, they choose a material that they have referenced before where they have said, oh, you can find it anywhere.
Yeah. Well, clearly not in this part of the Delta Quadrant because they had to land on the demon planet. But hey, you know, you do what you got to do.
You do what you got to do. All right, so we keep it.
Okay.
Episode 25, 1. After the rest of the crew is placed in suspended animation to protect them from dangerous radiation, 7, with only the Doctor for company, is placed in control of the ship. Now, this could be one of those episodes that we argue is essential because of Seven of Nine's journey.
Yes.
And it's written by Jerry Taylor.
Yes, it is. And you know how much we love her. Take a drink.
Yeah, we absolutely love Jerry Taylor here on To the Journey. This one, I don't know if it's essential because it comes up later, but I feel like this is, you know, like we started this season with this new crew member who only knew the collective, only knew, you know, billions of voices in her head. Now she's down to literally one voice in her head and no one else talking to her except for a figment of her imagination. And so I feel like we've skipped enough 7 episodes, and I know that we're going to touch on this a whole lot more, but I feel like this one we need, and it's a good episode.
Yes, I was also going to argue in favor of it, because this is a little better than just another 7 of 9 exploring her individuality episode, because there's some important things happening in this one. The crew, and especially Janeway, has to show some trust in 7 to get the job done. I mean, they're leaving the ship in her hands, essentially. And meanwhile, she has to overcome some serious mental obstacles for the sake of the ship and the crew. And I consider that a turning point as well for her, because I think this episode shows that by this point, she cares for Voyager and her shipmates as much as they care for her. And that's a big deal considering how she was in, say, Scorpion Part 2. So a lot of things have changed, and this, I feel, is like the episode where 7 really feels like a part of the crew.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So you got to keep it.
Got to keep it. Last one, season finale of season 4, episode 26, Hope and Fear. Finally decoding the message from Starfleet they received months earlier, Voyager is directed to a nearby sector where an unmanned Federation starship waits for them. However, everything is not what it seems when alien technology is found on board the new ship. This entire episode is a direct result of two things. Message in a bottle, where they get back in contact with Starfleet.
Yep.
And it's also a direct result from Scorpion, where Janeway sides with the Borg to defeat Species 8472.
Yes. So a lot of continuity going on here. Plus, you have the whole thread of Voyager's hopes for getting home and the feelings that that brings up.
This is a trifecta of continuity that we have established for Essential Trek. So, like Message in a Bottle, I feel like this one is one of the most essential Voyager episodes of all time.
Absolutely. I mean, you would not have this on any of the other shows. It is pure Voyager. It is essential.
It is essential. Well, there we go. Well, I'm glad that the season finale is essential to the show.
And it's not even a two-parter.
Not even a two-parter, exactly. Wow. Yeah, yeah.
But it still made it.
Oh, we're plugged our episodes into the computer. Beep, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop, boop. Just to review the list, this is what we have deemed essential. Scorpion 2, The Gift, Day of Honor, Year of Hell Part 1, Year of Hell Part 2, Mortal Coil, Message in a Bottle, Hunters, Prey, The Killing Game Part 1, The Killing Game Part 2, The Omega Directive, Living Witness as Optional, Demon 1, and Hope and Fear.
Okay, so that makes 16 episodes that we kept out of Season 4, with one optional.
There's 26 episodes in Season 4.
So, grand total, we have kept approximately 56 episodes out of 94 total, which means we've kept almost 60% of the entire series through season 4.
Wow. Wow. Fantastic. Thank you very much for keeping those numbers as a running total.
Yeah, I don't know why you're trusting me to math, but you're welcome.
Well, that's it. We hope you guys enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's actually a bigger total than I was thinking we'd have by this point. But hey, yeah. Cool. There is much more essential to Voyager than meets the eye. But Season 4 and Essential Voyager isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
They just happen to come at just the right time.
Right,
or just the right time
for it to be dangerous.
Like, literally, like, not even, like, that day, but, like 2 minutes before this happens.
Earl Grey.
Well, it does all those cloak experiments. It deployed that communications array.
Minefield?
And the minefield for exploratory purposes.
Let's not talk about the Defiant, because you know it's just going to upset me.
To the journey!
What about Tommy?
Tommy is a drunk, and...
He's drunk in the ready room meeting. His head's down, and so Janeway says, Tom, anything?
Just not so loud! Commentary, Trek Stars.
You know what? See, the thing is now, if Star Trek Beyond goes sideways in any way, you've planted that line in my brain. And I'm like, I only got half a peg. And I'm just going to trot that out if I don't like Star Trek Beyond.
The 602 Club.
I remember hearing Timothy Zahn, even back then, reading an article that he was listening to the John Williams scores in his car as he was thinking all this through and making sure the pacing felt like it did with the music. So maybe it had to do with the certain music he was listening to. Maybe he was listening to a New Hope score at that point. I don't know.
Literary Treks.
I think we had between the three of us half a dozen or eight different springboards, and they were written in such a way that they could have gone to either ship and crew. It was like, you know, the Sagittarius encounters big blob in space, or Endeavor encounters derelict spacecraft, or I'm being real surface here. I mean, the prompts we provided in the Bible were probably just a couple of sentences long, and it was just meant to say these are the kinds of stories we're thinking about.
Women at Warp.
So we went in and pitched, and I have to say that was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. I have scrubbed in on brain surgery. It did not frighten me as much as waiting outside Gene Roddenberry's office getting ready to go in and pitch to him.
Meta Treks.
You're not going to see a bunch of Klingons hanging around eating cake and you know, laughing at
well, unless it has, unless it's a peptide cake with mint frosting.
Peptide cake, indeed. Indeed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are, as you probably know, a listener-supported network, and that happens through the magic of Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm and check it out. There's various levels of subscription and perks in it for you if you decide to become a monthly subscriber, and we have some people to thank for supporting To the Journey as associate producers. Those people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Aaron Harvey, and Bruce Lish. We want to thank them for supporting us as well as the network at large, because this network officially would not be happening anymore without your help. Now, another way that you can help us non-financially is through iTunes, and we have two new reviews, two new people to thank for reviewing TTJ, and those lovely people are Ali Kildall and Rob Morick, and they left us glowing reviews and left us 5-star ratings in the US iTunes store. Quick reminder, if you are not in the U.S. and you leave us a review on a non-iTunes store, please let us know, and that way we can go into your country's respective store and check it out and thank you as well. Well, Season 4 is in the can now, and we've got to march onward. What's going to happen next week?
Next week, you know, I open every single episode by saying I'm excited, and because we're doing something special, because everything we do is special, but next week, I'm going to really mean it. Because next week, we're doing something that we only do once a year.
And then the following week, we're going to have something really cool planned for our 150th.
But you'll have to tune in to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!